Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, and Wednesdays during the season for us are going to be trends days. So we're going to focus on some trends that we're seeing, and certainly it is very early in the season. It's still NFL preseason. We're into some of the week one for high schools, and we had our first college football games played this past weekend. But there's certainly some things to track on and some things to look at as the season develops, and we're excited to discuss some of those things here today. So joining us on the podcast is the founder and CEO of First Down Playbook, Charlie Coyner. Charlie, great to have you here and get some of that NFL, former NFL coach perspective on this.
Hey, Keith, great to be here. Yeah, we're off and running. 2019, let's go.
And then joining us this year is going to be Zach Dunn, who is an analyst for some teams, and he is our content coordinator at USA Football. Zach, good to have you aboard.
Hey, Keith, thanks for having me.
Well, guys, we're going to focus on something we saw in these games this past week, a few things that came up. Certainly not all the things, but a few ideas on offense and on defense. So we'll start with a play from Florida and Miami. And one of the things I've started to see quite a bit is just playing around with the defensive end. Certainly defensives have done a lot of things to scheme up the offense and work gap exchanges and those kind of things. But something that I've seen becoming more and more popular, and I saw it in the Florida-Miami game, was the idea of starting out your zone read. So the back starts out across and then immediately puts his foot in the ground and gets into pitch phase, and really it becomes speed option. Zach, I know historically you have some perspective on that play. It has been around for a while. Where's some of the first times we've seen that play?
Yeah, Keith, so the first time I really noticed or ever seen it was in 2015 with Oregon under Mark Helfrich. They were in it with Mariota there. So, yeah, like you were saying, Keith, it's usually run from a 2x2 set with the running back offset towards the tight end. And what they'll do is that running back, you know, if he's offset to the right, he will put his left foot into the ground like he's going to run the zone read with the quarterback, you know, opening up, showing the ball like it's going to be zone read. Then the running back will put it, you know, will pivot back off that left foot and run like a toss track, and the quarterback will just flip the ball out to him. There's no real read on this from my understanding. They're just trying to flip the ball out there, trying to get the ball on the edge quick. And front side, that tackle, he won't be comboing on that three or so as much as he's trying to get up on that play side backer and just steal him inside. So I think what they're trying to do with this stuff is they're trying to combat those defensive ends that kind of skate, that try to play both, that try to play the give and the keep. So I mean, this is just a way to get the ball on the edge quick, I think.
Yeah, and it does have that speed option feel to it. And Charlie, I know speed option has been around for a long, long time, but when I look at something like this, when you get a little bit, just a little bit of that flow going the opposite way, and then you can get that ball out on the edge, I mean, hey, no doubt about it, speed option is designed to get it just out there to that tailback to draw the defense in. But now when I have that opportunity to just create a little bit of an angle for my guys who are blocking and that thing's not stretching out all the way, I start to relieve just some of that stress that's on those blockers to make the play.
Yeah, and Keith, sometimes plays are put in not necessarily because it's just the greatest play that you're running. Sometimes it's put in to help the other play. I think back to our coaching coordinator podcast last year that you and I did with Art Kaufman, formerly from North Carolina, Cal, and you know, defensive coordinator at so many places. And Art is the one that really helped me when I was at North Carolina coaching the defensive line. What everything was predicated where the back was. I mean, we set our whole defense not worried about 3x1 or 2x2, but because of the, you know, the zone read and everything was where the back was. So you put one little thing like that in and put a little doubt in the defense's mind, and really you may get some yardage on that speed option, but what you've actually done is your base play of the read option. Now you've enhanced that twofold.
100%. You always look for some of those constraints, and you know, I've always felt anytime you have that defender who can really just settle in and play on one thing, you know, the game starts to flow a little bit easier for him. And when you can do some things that keep him off balance, you know, back to the days where you would use that tight end, and sometimes that tight end's coming and blocking down on him. Sometimes he's being reached by the guy who's over him. I mean, the more things he has to think about and prepare for and react to, the tougher it becomes. So something like this that, you know, that guy, you're leaving him alone all the time, and now all of a sudden you've left him alone, but the ball goes outside of him, certainly starts to slow him down a little bit, and that really, I think, is the objective of a play like that. Let's take a look at our next play, one that we covered in All 22 Tuesday, and you can find the video for that over on First Down Playbook, where we broke down three plays from this past weekend from the Florida-Miami game. And again, some of those things I think that you want to look at and learn from and see how some of these developing trends can help you out. But this particular play is one that I've seen for some time in the NFL. I know I see the Patriots running it quite a bit lately, and it's essentially a receiver screen. And usually when we think of receiver screens, we're thinking of now screens, we're thinking of bubbles. But this one adds a dimension in that the guys who are coming off the ball basically are going to really make that feel like they're stemming a route. And because you have a defender maybe who's wary of a slant or something coming inside, allows you to have that leverage you need to make the block. The other thing that's happening then on the inside of it is essentially a flat route down the line of scrimmage. So you don't have a receiver who is attacking over the line of scrimmage, though he is giving that appearance coming from a little bit of depth off the line that he's running like a flat or arrow route across the line. So it has that feel that it's going to be quick game, but those receivers who normally are running routes turn into blockers right away. The other thing I like about this in this particular situation is it was one used early in the game. And on the other side, you had essentially a man beater packaged in a slant flat combination. So, Zach, I know you and I talked about this quite a bit. This has made its way around the NFL playbooks, and it's one that the Patriots, one of your favorite teams, refers to as Drew Brees.
Yeah, Keith. So, Dan Enos is the new OC over there at Miami this year. He came over from Bama last year. And Bama last year did some things in the pass game and screen game and such that was kind of similar to what New England does, and especially terminology-wise. To start this play out, it's really great formation use here as Eno starts in a one-back. There's just a one-back three-by-one set under center. Then they shift empty three-by-two. The running back goes out wide to the left, and a corner bumps out over him. So, you know, that tells the quarterback pre-snap, you know, we're getting zoned. So when you get zoned here to the three-man side, you're running the flat screen. So that's where he's going to throw the ball to. If it would have been a man, and if a linebacker would have bumped up over the running back, they'd have thrown the two-man side, which is a slant-flat combo. So, you know, it was just a great way for them to get the quarterback in a rhythm early, and, you know, also a way to get a early empty check out of 40. You know, you shift empty real quick on the second play or second or third play of the game, and you just get an empty check immediately. So, you know, the teams only carry so many checks empty in the game, so they kind of found out what they're going to get out of empty pretty early on.
And I know, Charlie, we talked about this. You really looked at this play as the things that used to happen in the tackle box for a defense really are now happening out on the perimeter, and guys have to make plays. Maybe guys who aren't used to always having to set an edge are setting an edge now.
No doubt. I mean, we're sitting there. If you flip that play and look at it from a defensive perspective, you're taking all the defensive axioms, the gap control and run responsibility, and all you've done is move it out on the hash. Now you've got, instead of a defensive end containing, you got a corner containing. Now you've got, instead of a three technique, you know, handling inside, now you've got a nickel or a safety. You know, you've got to stay inside the gap. And then, obviously, you've got a safety coming off the hash that's going to have to fit just right. As we talked about, you know, looking at these plays, you know, when you start fitting these gaps, they're a little wider. You're not talking about in between 200, 300-pound guys. You're talking about out in space. And the play that we're talking about right now was fitted up pretty good, to be honest. Now, the number two receiver got leverage on the nickel, I guess it was, fitting up there. But, you know, having said all that, if that safety coming off the hash doesn't make this play, this is going to be a touchdown on the second play of the game. So, yeah, a lot of things going on the second play of a college football game. And everything Zach said is exactly right, too, from a standpoint of you're finding out a lot of information and not giving a lot from a standpoint. This is a pretty simple play. Catch it, throw it out there, read man or zone, pick the side, and let's go.
And all these plays will be drawn up in our show notes, and we'll have some clips in there as well so you could take a peek at them. Again, our focus is on maybe some schematic trends, so it's not necessarily that you need to think about running this entire scheme, but there's some good ideas here, I think, that you can add to and tweak your offense with. We're going to come back to Florida and Miami in a little bit and talk about a couple things on the defensive side of the ball. But I want to jump over to Arizona and Hawaii. And one of the things I've seen happen really over the course of the last couple of years is pin and pull has become a big part of the RPO game. It certainly stresses a defense as get them running laterally and can open up some of those lanes, maybe clear things up a little bit better than a play that's hitting downhill. But I saw a couple things with the pin and pull I want to track on this season and see how these develop. And the first was the pin and pull RPO, and it was to a shallow receiver, a receiver running a shallow. Typically, we see that there's some slant routes or some hesitation slants that come into play. But I think, you know, one of the things we'll see a ton of, we started to see last year, was the use of a lot of shallow crossers so that if you are getting some of those man situations, you have a nice pass with a guy running away from a defender. And that's what you see here in this clip or in this play from Arizona against Hawaii, is that they have the pin and pull going one way with a shallow crosser coming in behind to serve as the guy who's going to replace that linebacker who runs to go and fit the pin and pull. Zach, what did you see in that particular play that grabbed your interest?
Yeah, so it's pretty interesting play here from Arizona. They go like a 3-by-1 bunch into the boundary here. Well, really, it's a 4-by-1 with the running back offset towards the bunch into the boundary. And, you know, the run of pin and pull back to the field here. So, I mean, that's a lot of space. The defense here has to be very, very gap sound with, you know, they got, what, 40 yards of field here that they got to cover with pin and pull coming back at them. But also they got 4-by-1 into the boundary. So, you know, the defense is going to have to rotate over there because you never know what you're going to get, some sort of vertical routes or really anything at all. So what they do here is they run pin and pull, and they read the backside linebacker for this, like, shallow slant route. The defender doesn't really – he doesn't really attack the pin and pull, but he's definitely out of the slant slash shallow window. So that gives the quarterback the cue to go ahead and pull and throw it here. But it's tough formationally because it's a 4-by-1 formation into the boundary here. And defenses are usually going to over-rotate towards that because they don't want to get beat up right here in the boundary with really big or anything at them right here. But they also could be gaps down back to the field with a pin and pull, and that's a ton of ground to be able to cover.
And, you know, Charlie, just looking at a route like this, you know, typically you do see kind of those slants that come into space or hitches, but it's not a slant. I mean, it starts out with a little bit of that field, but that guy is definitely running across, and, you know, the timing of it, I think, is what probably puts a stress on the defense with that particular play. You don't see that guy necessarily coming into the picture like you would on a quick slant. But in particular, Charlie, what is it that makes those kinds of plays, those shallow crossers, so effective against teams that want to go man?
To me, these things have really evolved in college football, but I look at it and I go, what makes the play good, in my opinion, since everybody's got one of those too, right? But is you've got the quarterback's eyes just focused on one part of the field. And you're right. You're essentially just replacing. And I actually got fortunate to hear Doug Peterson talk at the University of Tennessee Clinic. And he was talking about RPOs and wasn't necessarily a pin and pull like this one is here. But, I mean, you have your quarterback's eyes in just one place. And so, to me, you minimize what the quarterback has to look for. Yeah, is it man coverage? Is it zone? That's going to probably affect how the ball is thrown and how the route's run. But I look at it as being pretty daggone easy because you're looking in one area of the field and making a decision based on one thing and not several, like a lot of times we ask quarterbacks to do.
The other aspect of the pin and pull that they used, which I thought was pretty interesting, is they went ahead and went in their typical motion like they use on their key screen. So that guy gets into what will be a pitch phase. And away from him, they're running the pin and pull again. So essentially what you have is a play that is attacking the perimeter on both sides. It's attacking both flanks. You got pin and pull going one way, and you have an option phase coming out the other way. So now essentially you're separating the defense and deciding which perimeter to run on. I know I've seen some of this in the past, but again, as I think the pin and pull concept becomes more and more popular, I think you're going to see, especially with a running quarterback, maybe more of these situations that teams instead of looking at attacking the middle and the outside, will attack both flanks and really stress the defense to the outside on both plays. In regard to that, Zach, what kinds of things have you seen historically or looking over, you know, the past season that kind of show this trend developing?
I'd say the 4x1. I see a lot of teams now going 4x1 with, you know, any sort of RPO to the trip side, you know, back coming across on either pin and pull or mid zone or whatever, and just reading that backside backer, whether they're running, you know, a stick route by number three, slant bubble from number two and three. But 4x1 RPO world has gotten really big, because 4x1 plays with defenses a lot. I mean, they got to rotate to the four-man side. They can't send back and play their base rules if it was 3x1, because there's a chance that back goes strong and all of a sudden you got four guys strong. So I think that 4x1 is definitely a trend that I've seen pick up a lot. I know the Chiefs messed with it a lot last year. They had a lot of their RPO game came off 4x1, a lot of pin and pull, a lot of outside zone where they're reading that backside backer. So that's what I saw a lot of. I think that, like, a big trend that will probably pick up a lot is the 4x1 stuff.
Charlie, looking at, you know, a play like that, the pin and pull to one side and an option phase out the other, again, kind of that idea of stretching your defense on the flanks, you know, having coached defense a number of years, Charlie, you know, your thoughts on how that stresses a defense?
Well, yeah, it's what you're doing. To me, it's conflict of assignment on steroids, meaning you're doing exactly what you're talking about. And it's not, you know, a second ago, I was just talking about how you isolate on a defender. Okay, but now, in my opinion, Keith, what you're talking about is true, too. Now you're not concentrating. You're concentrating on the defensive coordinator. I mean, because how are you going to be strong on both your flanks? And all of a sudden, the next thing that happens is they hit you on that right over the middle because some backer has read the pin and pull. So to me, it's, you know, we talk a lot about using all 53, you know, yards and of the football field. And I think that that's what's going on schematically now, too. And it's not all jet sweep. I mean, it's responsibility-wise, you better be very sound on both perimeters. And guess what? Right after you do that, then they're going to mess with one of your inside backers or some nickel or dime. They're going to mess with his head with a pin and pull.
You know, I could think back to my high school years, and I want to say game happened in 2005, and we're playing a team. They run what looks like, I mean, they had run some double screen. So they're running like a running back screen out to the one side with linemen pulling. They're running a perimeter screen to the other, kind of a flash screen, and the guy coming underneath the other receivers. And, you know, our defense was all keyed up to stop on those perimeters. And then all of a sudden, they just run a guy right back into the middle and split the defense. I mean, he's running like no one else was on the field. I mean, he was that open after he got the ball because the defense had flown to each sides of those, each of those flanks, and now there's something in the middle there.
Window dressing. I mean, you're talking about you're just messing with their mind with the keys. If you're old enough, you've all seen play where the quarterback used to come up under the center and both guards would pull outside. And the backers would run outside because the guards pulled outside. And guess what? The center and the quarterback took up right off the middle for 20 yards. So, I mean, essentially it's kind of the same thing, but just once again, much more complex. You're once again making a defensive coordinator not only defend every yard, but now start defending schemes to each side. And you better be careful at the middle too.
So those are some of the things to keep an eye on here. I think we'll continue to see those types of plays develop through the 2019 season, and we'll be tracking on those and share some of those both with you on this podcast as well as on our blogs and over at First Down Playbook with Charlie. But I want to flip over to the defensive side and back to the Florida-Miami game. And the Florida defense had 10 sacks and 16 tackles for loss. Now, some of those you can account for guys who are incredible athletes making plays. But schematically, I saw a couple things I think are interesting in what they were doing there. And the first one, been around for a long time, but essentially was a delayed blitz. Now, I'm not privy to exactly what they're setting up there. It certainly could have been that middle linebacker playing rat on the quarterback and then taking a gap. But to me, it looks like he was intentionally allowing that blocking to set up. They were, in this one particular instance, bringing somebody from the outside off the edge who was out over a slot receiver and letting those guys push out to their responsibilities to open up a lane for that linebacker to run through. Charlie, just looking at that concept, timing is so critical that, you know, it's easy to draw those things up and make them work on the whiteboard. It's a lot harder, especially when you're at game speed and you got that youngster out there running a delay blitz. For you, what's the key to coaching up that guy to be successful on delays?
I think you just said it. When you start doing that, you're not dealing with a grease pen anymore or a grease marker. You're not dealing with a piece of chalk. You're dealing with instincts, which may be every bit as important as athletic ability. So, yeah, if you're coaching a linebacker, and once again, you touched on this too. It's hard. Is that backer green dogging? Is he coming once someone, his assignment in coverage blocks? Or is it a delayed blitz? What is it? And we don't know that. We're not in Todd Grantham's meetings or anything like that. But I think that is what makes it special, meaning that you've got a special guy that has a feel. And sometimes that feel is that you're not scared. In other words, if you're scared, I watched some of the other pressures this past weekend in the NFL. And what you'll see a lot of times when a backer is green dogging, meaning they're adding on once their back blocks, is they don't pull the trigger fast enough. And so you're always caught in between, right? You're in no man's land. You're not pressuring the quarterback. You're not a rat in a hole. You're not doing either. You're playing with 10 then. So to me, a lot of it in a situation like this, and obviously Florida was aggressive as all get out, is finding someone that's not scared to pull the trigger. And I've heard good defensive coordinators say before, I don't care if you get there or not, but don't get caught in between. Do something. Cover somebody or get home to the quarterback. Don't be in between every play because we're playing with 10.
And Zach, you and I have had quite a few blogs and done some podcasts and coaches' notes this past year on the simulated pressures of double mug blitzes, all those kinds of things. To me, it seems like something like this, you know, to add a delay, which you can see some things that certainly look like that's part of the concept here from Florida, just adds another dimension to that idea of really getting the offensive line to move and be wrong and open up those lanes for you. It's not that all out, I'm going to use speed to beat somebody. It's I'm using their technique. I'm using their scheme against them.
Yeah, this is a great schematic blend. I will write this one up and throw it up on the blog next week from what I see what they're doing here. Because it looks like they're attacking Miami's protection here. Because, you know, Ford is in their man front here. They're playing a under front. So, you know, the offensive line is going to go four down to the mic. And they're going to have the back scan Wilt to the nickel Sam Strong. It's kind of like what happens here is like in the backside, the guard and tackle fan out to this three technique and looks like, you know, you call them like a wide five. Well, the wide five drops back into coverage weak. Then they send the center guard and tackle to the field to duel the nose end and Mike Backer. The play starts here and the nose and two ends rush. You know, that Jack Backer drops back into coverage, but they bring the nickel from the field here. But the Will kind of just sits at first. You know, he doesn't rush. He just kind of sits. So this running back here is scanning Will to Sam. He sees the Sam come first. So, you know, he's going to slide out and, you know, take the Sam. Well, the Will then wraps around to the front side A. So, you know, he comes completely unblocked then. Because really the running back was responsible for the Will and Sam there. So it was just a great, great thematic blitz that I'll probably write up on the blog this week and put some more detail into.
And the way to beat that is to get the ball out, right? The longer you hold the ball back there, the more issues you have. So,
yeah,
you know, certainly that's an answer for some of those delays.
That's another part of it. You sit there and you look at these pressures, and that's where I'm real sensitive. And I'm sure, you know, Keith, you are too, having coached as long as you have. you don't know. I mean, you have to be careful about, is that the quarterback? Is that the offensive line? Is that the back? What is that back supposed to scan? You know, so there's a lot that goes into that. And I see commentators all the time blister some poor kid that I don't think, the way I looked at it, I would have thought like, I don't know. I think probably the quarterback had to see that one himself. So, yeah, a lot going on out there.
And again, with all these plays, I mean, you know, we certainly are making some educated guesses as to what's being coached. But I think what you see in looking at these is that there's some good concepts here. Whether that was actually happening or not, there's some things you can glean from that and certainly use to make your team more effective on offense or defense here this year. And again, we'll share all of these on our show notes at blogs.usafootball.com. And head over to First Down Playbook. Check out the video segment we did on All 22 Tuesday, which covered some of these plays and other plays. And we really got deep into looking at some particular schemes and what exactly is happening on those. So, guys, I look forward to continuing this conversation with you throughout the season. It'll be exciting as we start to see the weeks pile up on each other and as we start to see maybe these plays recycled and come back in different ways over the course of a season.
Yeah, thanks, Keith. I look forward to it. I think Zach just hit on it just a second ago, and I'll part with this, is that a lot of great ideas that we're talking about here, but when he said that Florida has really broken down Miami's protection, so as a coach out there, I mean, that's the part that you're going to have to do. You're about to take these schemes, but it could be applicable to a high school or any other college or really an NFL too, but you've got to break down your opponent's protections and things like that in order for it to all work.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's what defense are doing so well now. A lot of these defense coordinators around the country, whether it be, you know, guys like Saban or Kirby Smart or Dave Aranda or Ty Grantham or Manny Diaz, I think they're great at dictating protections then attacking the weakness of that protection to get the one-on-one matchup that they want. And, I mean, that's just tough on offenses because these defenses can dictate so much pre-snap with protections and really get the matchups they want.
Well, guys, again, thank you for your time. Again, check out all we're doing and get the diagrams and video clips of these plays at blogs.usafootball.com and at firstdownplaybook.com. And we'll join you again next week as we break down some of the more popular games and plays from this past weekend. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Please check out all we're doing on Twitter at our Twitter handle for coaches at FBDEVCoach. Check out our systems for blocking, defeating blocks, and tackling at footballdevelopment.com. If you register there with your email address, you can get access to our shoulder tackle system, the entire system, as well as 3 free videos of your choice, either from advanced tackling or from our contact system, which is blocking and defeating blocks. This is some of the best stuff, some cutting edge stuff, I think, that you're going to find is very efficient and effective in the way you teach your players. And there's a lot of drills here that help you improve that skill year-round. Check it out at footballdevelopment.com. Check out our coaches' notes on usafootball.com. Go to the resources tab for development and training. Our coaches' notes are given to us by coaches around the country, state champs, some of the NCAA leaders. Those guys have been doing a great job in putting that together in our tips format, which is teach, install, and problem solve. And in there, we also have further review, which we allow our clips to be downloadable, and you can download those and put them into your Huddle. No need for an extra subscription to a Huddle page. So check those out. And as always, go to blogs.usafootball.com for our show notes, our analysis, articles, and coaching. Finally, if you're enjoying the podcast, head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rate. If you have a minute, write a review. It really helps out the podcast.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.